The average home price in Canada is about $495,000. In a smaller community, that'll get you a nice three-bedroom with a back deck. In a big city, that amount won't even get you a carport. The minimum down payment you'd need to purchase a home at that price, 5%, 25 grand. So anyone looking to buy their first home knows how long you might have to save money before purchasing a place that you've been jazzed about. Moshe Maleski joins us now to talk about first-time home buyers and the down payments that they require. He is a finance professor at York University's Schulich School of Business. Hello there.
Hi.
I'm going to park to the side the question of whether young people should be buying homes, but many want to, regardless. Many want to. So what should first-time home buyers know about saving the down payment?
Well, I think that, you know, the down payment is part of a much bigger equation, which is the type of debt that they're going to take on and whether they can afford that debt and whether to go fixed or floating, open or closed. So I would say that the down payment is part of a much larger conversation. But at the very least, I would say the more the merrier.
Yeah. Well, and they will be first-time home buyers, any home buyer, hit with CMHC insurance if they are under the 20% threshold. How do you determine if you should buy with only 5% down versus save, and wait until you've got the 20% to avoid it?
You know, as I tell many of my students at the Schulich School of Business, it's not just a spreadsheet problem. You know, this isn't just the sitting down and figuring out the numbers and should I wait another year? It's a lifestyle question as well. It's what you do for a living, where you plan to be in 5 to 10 years. I don't think it's just about the numbers.
What do you think of the home buyer's plan?
Look, you know, taking money out of some sort of shelter and utilizing funds that were earmarked for retirement or some other goal is problematic. I think that people should have a budget for where they want to live and how much they want to spend, and they should stick to that budget. And if the mortgage payment is within that budget, they should go ahead with it. But I also think that people only view the house through the prism of the mortgage, and they don't think about all the other expenses associated with home ownership, whether it's going to be insurance for the house, whether it's maintenance and it's property taxes, and then it's keeping up with the Joneses, making sure that your house looks as nice as the one on the street. So I really do think that it's not just about the down payment. You really have to think beyond that for all the other expenses you're going to incur.
Yeah, you have that great milestone of moving into your great new house and then the roof leaks and, you hate the bathroom and all that stuff.
I don't know how many people are living in empty houses because they could afford the house, but they couldn't furnish any of it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, if a young person comes to you, they don't have an RRSP already, would you recommend they save for their down payment inside an RRSP and use the home buyer's plan or inside a TFSA?
You know, I like the TFSA, especially for people that are in low marginal tax rates, at least now where that tax benefit or the deduction isn't going to be as valuable. If you've got room to save in a TFSA, use it. I don't see any reason not to. I would certainly not save outside the TFSA for a home, you know, to go out and purchase a home. I would use the TFSA. But I think that the bigger issue here is whether or not you're ready for home ownership, whether your personal balance sheet can sustain it, as opposed to whether you wait a year or two and save inside one shelter or another.
One of the big trends driving house prices is the bank of mom and dad. Obviously, some challenges there if they only help with the down payment and then you're in a house that doesn't have any furniture. How long do you think this one can run? How long can this trend run? Or do eventually do mom and dad get tapped out?
You know, I think that anybody's crystal ball on this one is going to be hazy. But I do think that, A, parents themselves have to think carefully about doing this because it's going to be at the expense of their own long-term stability and retirement. Second of all, and this depends on family dynamics, you are committed. I mean, if you've taken part of the down payment, even though there were no implicit or explicit strings attached when that was given, in some sense, down the line, you may have to come to their aid and you have to be ready and comfortable with that. So I would think carefully.
You also get a vote on the carpet and the paint color, I think, or maybe not.
Well, they get to criticize.
Yeah, you get to criticize. Sure. Hey, young people have never seen a downturn in housing. In fact, you know, many people who are middle age really don't remember what it was like in Toronto in the late 80s for sure. What would you want young people to know about history?
Well, I think that part of finance is teaching history. In fact, you know, there's an entire generation that doesn't know what a market downturn is because in the last 10 years, we haven't really had a downturn, whether it's real estate or financial markets. We talk about the financial crisis of 08 and 09 as if it was yesterday. But if you're 25, this never occurred because you don't remember what happened when you were 13 or 14. So I think financial history is a big part of financial planning. And you want to go through and do case studies. You obviously want to make it interesting. But financial history teaches us that when things go bad, a lot of things on our balance sheets go bad at the same time. Bad news comes in pairs and triplets and quadruplets.
For example?
Look, you know, here's one example. And, you know, we'll talk about other cases that are more relevant to Canada. But think about what's happening in California with the fires and people that have been devastated in terms of their home, people that have had their jobs impacted. But now let's talk about Pacific Gas and Electric, PG&E, the utility company there, whose stock price plummets. Employees suffer. They have a stock purchase plan. They suffer as well. You get hit with your financial capital and your human capital at the same time. Or let's go to Alberta, where oil prices decline and then real estate prices decline and employment prospects dim. It's never just one thing that goes wrong. And I think with housing, you have to take that into account as well.
One of the things young people are doing, if they actually can get into the market, is getting creative in how to meet that monthly mortgage payment. I know one young person who's renting out two of her three bedrooms on Airbnb. What's your wisdom on these kind of alternative paths?
Look, as long as you go into it with your eyes open and you're aware of the risk of being a homeowner and you're aware of the tax implications and the legal implications of having somebody living there that you're not quite happy with, and good luck trying to get them out or to get rid of them if it doesn't work out. I think that these are all great ways to make sure that you can afford your payments. But going into this, you have to understand these are all time-consuming activities. And whether or not your time is better spent doing something else. I mean, it's not free in terms of time. If you have a decent job and you earn a good wage per hour, it might be better to do overtime to make those payments. But I certainly see that happening. And all these empty condos and houses are eventually going to be Airbnb.
We talked about some of the other expenses that go alongside owning a home. So that's a part of the spreadsheet, certainly. When should young people consider approaching a financial institution in their purchase process? Is it before they go to their first open house? Is it 5 minutes before they want to drop an offer on a home?
Look, I'm not sure the process of approaching a financial institution today is what it was 10 or 15 years ago. You know, you can search online and get pre-approval. Is that approaching a financial institution when you're sitting in your pajamas and doing it on your laptop? I do think you should get some sense of how much is the most you can absolutely borrow. And the earlier you know that, the better, because your eyes tend to get much larger than your wallet.
You work with a lot of people given your job, a lot of young people given your job. What is the one question you keep getting asked that you wished you could answer once and never have to answer live again? What do they all want to know, or what are they all frustrated by or confused about that you can now answer for all eternity in this interview?
Well, I think they want to know whether housing prices are going to continue to increase the way they have in the last 10 or 20 years. And I have to say there's no guarantee of that. And I find myself repeating that over and over again.
Are you optimistic or pessimistic about that question?
You know, generally speaking, I'm realistic. I think it's obviously going to be regional. It depends where you are. Is it a condo? Is it a house? Is it downtown? Is it in the suburbs? Is it in economically vibrant neighborhoods? Is it in places where people want to actually live? I just am afraid of the amount of money that's being placed into one asset. People are spending almost their entire human capital on a house. Add up all the income and wages you're going to earn over the course of your life on an after-tax basis. Maybe $1 million, $1.5 million. Realistically, the sum of everything you will earn ever, all of it is going into house. I'm uncomfortable with that.
I hear you, and I agree. Moshe, thank you for your time.
My pleasure.
Moshe Bilevsky is a finance professor at York University's Schulich School of Business.